Now, up until the Civil War broke out, as I understand it, the right to secession was simply taken for granted by most Americans. This was prior to Lincoln's administration because they saw the country as basically a voluntary association of states.
The Union armies were doing very badly, particularly by the summer of 1864. War weariness had really settled down on the shoulders of the nation, and it seemed to a lot of people by that summer that all of these men had died in vain, that there was so much bloodshed and that the North could not seem to win this war. And so there were a lot of questions about whether it was worth continuing to fight or at this point whether it would be better just to let the South go its own way. People in the North, Republicans and Democrats, starting to ask very hard questions about this war and whether it was worth continuing.
First off, let's get the name out of the way. Where did that name come from?
Some Republicans started to refer to the Peace Democrats as Copperheads as early as the summer of 1861. And a copperhead, of course, is a really highly poisonous snake.
Yes.
And that was very much what the Republicans wanted to convey. The Copperheads tried to turn this to their advantage, though, because at the same time, the penny at that time was also called a Copperhead. And on one side of the penny was Lady Liberty. And what was really interesting to the Peace Democrats was civil liberties. And they were very concerned about incursions on civil liberties during the war. And so they took the penny and started to make pins out of them, and they would wear these on their jackets to indicate what their loyalties were. So they really tried to turn that to their advantage.
What did they mean by their slogan, the Union as it was, the Constitution as it is?
They wanted the Union to reunite. The problem with that was that the Confederates had no interest in reuniting. Their vision was that the country would reunite, that slavery would be intact. The Constitution as it is was an allusion to their insistence on civil liberties. They were very concerned about what the Lincoln administration had done in order to prosecute this war. Lincoln had raised troops without congressional authorization. Things like the federal income tax, the draft, which was the first draft in American history. They saw all of these things as being entirely unconstitutional. And that goes to this question of secession. There was nothing, and still is nothing, in the Constitution about the terms of membership for states. Is this a relationship that will be in perpetuity? It's completely silent on that.
Well, the Constitution still remain silent on the issue, even though the North obviously won. A lot of the soldiers, a lot of the people in the North did not at all favor not only freeing the slaves, but they were concerned about equality, allowing African Americans to vote. And there was a great deal of concern about that, not just in the South. And that was not the intention of the Union soldiers originally. And what did the Copperheads see as the reason for the war?
Well, the Copperheads believed that this was a war that was brought on by the abolitionists.
Right.
That these were a bunch of rabble-rousers who had, you know, that was in a clear minority that had taken the nation to war. But I think it's fair to say that most of the people in the North, by the time the Civil War broke out, were opposed to slavery. What they proposed to do about that is then the next question. A lot of them did not want it to extend into the territories, but they weren't prepared to attack it where it existed in the state. They thought it was constitutionally protected there, but they thought that by not allowing slavery to grow, eventually it would die out. When the Emancipation Proclamation came around, an awful lot of the soldiers in the Union Army said, you know, I did not sign up for a war against slavery. I signed up for a war to save the Union. In November of 1862, the Copperheads did really well in the off-year election, and the soldiers were shocked by this. And it turned a lot of them into Republicans, regardless of what party they were with. when they started the war, an awful lot of those soldiers came out of the war as Republicans. There was real reason to worry about treason in your midst. Whereas now, I don't think that people who speak out against the war necessarily pose this potential immediate threat to the government. I don't think that it's quite as easy to make the equation of, you know, somebody who speaks out against the war could be an Iraqi agent.
Right.
Is here to blow up New York again.
If you just tuned in, Bert Cohen here on Portside, talking with the author of a wonderful new book, just amazingly engrossing, called Copperheads, Jennifer Weber, professor of history, I believe it is, at University of Kansas. Military rule during the Civil War within the North superseded civil law. Is that correct? And what were the effects of that?
There are a couple places that is important, and chief among them is Maryland. Very early in the war, Lincoln declares martial law in Maryland, and it ends up imprisoning almost the entire state legislature there. And the reason that Maryland is so important there is that if Maryland secedes from the Union, as the legislature was expressing an interest in, Washington, D.C., the United States Capitol, is now entirely surrounded by enemies.
Lincoln suspended habeas corpus on 8 occasions. He empowered military commanders to imprison thousands of civilians without any recourse to the courts, and some 300 allegedly disloyal newspapers were shut down. Now, Lincoln is generally understood as one of our greatest, if not the greatest, president. He was called a tyrant at the time, a despot who assaulted the Constitution. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. Well, I don't think that this is his bright, shining moment. They did wind up imprisoning a lot of people. They do wind up throwing a lot of editors in jail. I think the average time that people were imprisoned without being charged or without having a trial was about 4 months. There was real reason to be concerned about most of the people who were arrested. One of the other things to keep in mind here, not to be too much of a Lincoln apologist here, but that it was not Lincoln who carried this out, but typically the people beneath him, and usually it was the army. And some of these people were really overzealous, in my view. It was a PR problem for him as much as anything else, and he knew that. He's also a lawyer, so he realizes the constitutional implications. He knows that this is not something that you do lightly. The one thing that makes the experience in the Confederate armies rather different than that in the Union Army is that your home is being invaded. Your country is being invaded. And I think that gives them a really different mindset than most of the Northern soldiers. As far as why the South seceded, going back to the time of the Declaration of Independence, there had been arguments over slavery, arguments over whether or how aggressive the country should be in terms of limiting slavery.
Were there also questions about dominance of the states or the central government?
Those have been issues that have stuck with us till today.
Right.
You know, questions about big government, questions about who should be the dominant power. Should it be the federal government? Should it be the state's government? You know, where should the balance of power lie? And largely fueled by immigrants, this growing population of the North and the growing economic power of the North, they could see that their influence in American politics was going to be on the wane. And I think that concerned them almost as much as what was going to happen as slavery. And I think that was another very strong, though less obviously stated, factor in their decision to secede.
Lincoln rarely mentioned the issue of slavery in his own political speeches until it became more politically expedient to do so. What about the Emancipation Proclamation? It only freed slaves in Confederate states, which meant that the Emancipation Proclamation itself freed not one slave because the North had no power over that. I got the sense that it was some kind of a military and or political tactic. Can you shed some light on that?
Sure. In fact, the Emancipation Proclamation was even a little more limited than what you're saying. When he issued it, it applied only to areas that were still under rebellion. Well, by that time, New Orleans, for instance, was an occupied city. So this did not apply to New Orleans because New Orleans was no longer in rebellion. It gives the army the power that when they get into these areas that are in rebellion, any slaves that they happen to pick up or any slaves who run to Union lines are at that point and forever free. But you're right, this is at the moment very much a military endeavor. The fact that there are 4 million slaves working in fields and factories means that you have that many more white men who can join the Confederate Army, go to the front, and fight. Lincoln thinks that he can help make this war end faster by striking at the heart of the Confederate labor force.
Was the goal of many Copperheads simply ending this bloodshed? I mean, it was incredibly brutal bloodshed, brother against brother. What was their goal? Was it to support the South or just to have peace?
I think it was the latter. They were concerned about civil liberties. They were concerned about the Constitution. They were concerned that Lincoln was riding roughshod over this. And I can see how they might come to that conclusion. Things like suspending habeas corpus are valid things to be concerned about. They wanted the war to end. Their idea of the Union as it was could not happen without a military victory. The Confederates were not going to come back into the Union voluntarily, and the Copperheads never, ever realized that.
Now, I can't help but see some parallels that we now, with the war in Iraq, see soldiers, men and women now, dying over there and losing limbs, and a lot of people are asking, for what? Wasn't there a similar sentiment on the part of a lot of people in the North?
Well, yes.
Imagine.
Yes. We've lost 3,000 and some military people at this point in Iraq, and look at how the country's responding. Imagine 100 times that. There were many towns where you could not find a young man because they were all in the army. So this was a profound national experience. What we have today in terms of the country wondering about, are these losses in vain, is just a faint echo of what Northerners were experiencing in the summer of 1864. Because as I said, you're talking about 100 times the dead in the Civil War that we have now. And the country was a tenth of the size that it is. It's incredibly dispiriting to Northerners. And war weariness is so huge. And newspaper editors, Republicans and Democrats, are calling for an end of the war, whatever the cost. They don't really care anymore. And a lot of Northerners think this way. And so the Copperheads' star is very much on the rise. And this is the summer where they become more powerful, more influential than they ever have been before. But, you know, they're never really in charge of their own fate. It's really the successes and failures of the Union Army that determines how influential and how successful the Copperheads are. So by the end of August, Lincoln is sure he's going to lose his reelection bid in November. The Democrats go into their national convention in Chicago, and they feel fantastic. But the Copperheads are on the verge of taking over the party. And the reason I believe this is because one of the leading Copperheads in the country is named the vice presidential candidate for the Democrats. And the guy who writes, who's in charge of writing the party platform, is the most notorious Copperhead in the North. It's the same guy who got banished to the Confederacy. He's come back in to the North. He's snuck in fact, mm-hmm. and he's now writing this document in which the Democrats call the war a failure and demand an immediate cessation of hostilities. They think they've got this election in the bag. They could not feel better. And then on the night of September 1st, September 2nd, the Confederates withdraw from Atlanta. And it is a stunning moment, I think, in American history and American political history especially, because public opinion does a 180 literally overnight. People people in the North hear that the Confederates have abandoned Atlanta and Sherman's moved in and he's taken this. And suddenly they are sure that they have won the war and it's just a matter of playing out the clock from this point on. The final hope of the Confederates is riding on the Copperheads and the ability of the Democrats to win the election in November. And, of course, they go down to flaming defeat. And that really, as much as anything, marks the end of the Confederacy.